Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Almost 12 o'clock hour here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McKay, Willie Donick with you. Derek Mason is on vacation. And Willie, look, as the suit, you know, I have the playbook that I am supposed to run and I need everybody to run. And maybe I was a little too good there because I thought we were late. We were actually early. So, hey, you know what? Here we are. It's okay. We get 2 extra minutes to talk with Teron Davenport.
When you're at Titans training camp, stuff happens. You roll with it. You don't know exactly who's coming to the podium. You don't know when your guest is going to come over. So you got to be able to adjust a little bit the playbook. So I feel good about where we are.
I said Omaha at the line.
You did?
And we audibled and we changed.
And everybody was on the same page.
It was all good.
You got us in the right play.
So sometimes the captain takes you down a weird path, but you get to where you need to go anyway. So that is where we are. And we are live at Titans training camp today. You heard from Mike Vrabel. Teron Davenport going to sit down with us here in just a second. So we will get his thoughts on some of the things that he has heard. We're also going to ask him our question of the day because I think TD will have some good answers for this as well. And I'm sure y'all are going to rub the Mets in my face.
We are.
As well. So that
we
that
have
is
it all
fine.
Planned out. We resisted sending you some, you know, excessive videos of Let's Go Mets and, you know, the trumpets being played with Edwin Diaz, because we spared you some of that, but we had our own little celebration this morning before practice.
Our Titans training camp coverage is presented by USA Hemp Store and Parman Energy, your one-stop petroleum solution. We say hello to Teron Davenport from ESPN. And TD, number one, congratulations to your Mets. So there it is.
I had to get my own intro music. You
know? Okay, you ready? I think we might need to do this whenever Teron's coming on. We sound the trumpets. Like when Edwin Diaz comes in. So when Teron's walking up, you could do the Edwin Diaz jog across the field.
Jog to the beat and everything.
Yeah, when you come from the media area, the podium, to jog over the set, we can have you come in like you're coming in from center field.
There you go.
I like that. I tell you what. Yeah, see, that's perfect. I tell you what, I did ESPN Radio back-to-back-to-back days this weekend, and I made sure the producers, at least one segment, they brought us in on that, you know?
Nice. He has been unbelievable, by the way. 19 strikeouts by Mets pitching yesterday, and I don't know what the strikeout rate is for Diaz. He strikes out literally over half of the batters he faces.
He is just gas.
Okay, enough of that.
Okay, sorry. I want to rub it into
Jacob DeGrom.
All right, TD. Unofficial depth chart comes out. We always know that it means something, obviously, but it doesn't mean everything when you get it to this point before the first preseason game. Dylan Radin's listed as the right tackle. Aaron Brewer listed as the left guard. Do you feel like that is going to be the case when we get to September 11th and the Titans take on the Giants?
Well, one thing we do have to remember, there's a slash there.
Yeah,
there is a slash.
Two. I think Aaron Brewer, and when you look at him, that guy has come in and just more or less destroyed that competition. It's not really something that you're seeing. Like, he's getting all the significant reps. Everybody is, whether it's Jeffrey Simmons talking about how it's so good for him to go against a guy like that because he's faster than the average interior guy, but he still has the strength. You know, Jamarco Jones, I don't know that he's going to beat out Aaron Brewer. But when you look at the right tackle position, that's where there's a competition because both of those guys are getting significant reps. And I tell you what, I was watching pass rush period over there, and Nicholas Petit-Ferrar, he's had some really good reps against Harold Landry. And, you know, Landry is one of the best pass rushers on this team.
Yep.
So you're seeing that. And then you also see, even in the drills, and especially, and I'm talking about like individual period, you know, where they're hitting bags, but then even during team period, where they're, you know, going at it. And even inside run yesterday was a good opportunity to watch. And that is just a different punch with Petit Ferrer than there is with Dylan Radins. And that's, I think, going to give him that edge. I think Petit Ferrer eventually is going to become that starter at right tackle.
Okay, so that you led me, this is like quarterback leading the receiver here, that you led me right to where I was going to go with that. Let's just say that Radins starts the season, but Petit Ferrer takes it over. I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily. Now, you have a second-round pick in Radins that you're hoping is going to do something for you, whether it's playing the right tackle position right now. Maybe eventually he takes over at left tackle when Lawan's done, give him more time. But I think if you go from one to the other at some point in the season, as long as you're getting production, that's going to be okay.
Yeah, I think that's the key. As long as you're getting production, that's going to be the big part. You got to have guys up front paving the way for Derrick Henry, who looks good, by the way. But I think, you know, when you talk about just like losing Roger Saffold, right? So now you're losing a big degree of, you know, the bodyguard type of the what do you call those guys? Bouncer. You're losing like he was a bouncer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So if you could kind of get another player in there that is very physical, that will help. Radins, I wonder if he could be better at guard. I don't know. You know what I mean? So that's something. Initially, they had him working a left guard, if you remember.
Yeah.
So, talking about last year. So, that's going to be really – I'm curious how that's going to pan out.
Teron Davenport is with us. You said you think Derrick Henry looks good. We're all looking for clues with that, and it's hard to tell, right, because nothing's live yet. So, what makes you think he's looking really good in your mind?
Well, from a physical standpoint, he looks good. I think he actually looks bigger. He – did a football and jersey signing for the Children's Dream Foundation yesterday, and I was just looking at him. I was like, man, this like his upper body got bigger.
You think so?
I believe it.
I didn't think that was possible
or necessary. Yeah. Right. But and then you see him breaking the helmet on a stick yesterday. You know, and today it's. They put like three rolls of tape on it to put it back together. But the other thing, there were a couple runs that I've seen him have earlier in camp, and he hit the outside, and just the way he accelerated, I was like, I think he's back. I think he is back.
Do you read into anything else on the depth chart at running back? I noticed they've got, you know, they got Jordan Wilkins in there. I think we all, in our minds, are thinking it's three guys, that it's Hilliard and Haskins behind Derrick Henry. But so where does Wilkins fit into this in your mind?
He had a nice run today. He cut it back, and he exploded away from everyone. Really, really nice run. He's tough, and he gave the Titans problems. You know, a couple games. There was a home game 2 years ago. He gave them work. I'm not sure – Jordan Wilkins, Trenton Cannon, that's where I'm curious if they keep a fourth back. And the thing that Trenton Cannon has for him is Craig Aukerman raved about him when he talked about special teams. And you see him back there on kick return with the group, and then also he's a gunner. That holds value. This is a team that will reserve spots for special teamers. So I think that could edge him out over Jordan Wilkins, but – if Wilkins has a good preseason, that's where the separation could happen.
Go ahead.
We saw the 2-minute drill. All three quarterbacks got to run. It's always fun to, you know, it's, you don't want to read too much into the results one way or the other, but what did you take out of that the most?
Kyle Phillips. In that first drive, so we could go through the drives.
Yeah.
Ryan Tannehill, his drive with the ones, of course. Kyle Phillips, a crossing route. Kyle Phillips over the middle, really nice. He just went up and got the football, and Tannehill mentioned that when I asked him about Kyle Phillips and the trust part of it. He went to him two times on that drive, more than anyone else. So I thought that was significant. And then also who else had the Mason Kinsey had a catch along the sideline.
He had a nice catch.
Yeah, so these are smaller guys going up and playing big. I like to see that. Steve Smith is one of my favorite receivers ever. So seeing a smaller guy go up and do those type of things, you know, brings a smile to my face. The second drive, Logan Woodside and Racy McMath, that was an interesting series they had, right? He hit Woodside on a curl along the sideline. You know, Chris Jackson stepped up and had a couple nice reps there. He punched out the Racy McMath one, and then he went up with Traylon Burks and knocked the ball down. He was all over him on that curl route. And that's something that, you know, they're working on, the contact at the top of the route. There wasn't that much as far as, like, the push-off for Burks. So,
in other words, Burks being able to withhold and stand his ground against contact.
Yeah, well, no, him not creating that contact.
And not getting called for
offense. Creating that separation with the push-off.
Yeah.
You know, Chris Jackson fought right through that and broke it up. So I'll end it with this. Malik Willis, he had a nice drive. And I like what they're doing with him as far as 7-on-7 period, right, a couple of days ago, low red zone where everything goes quicker, so that forces him to process quicker. Today, you know, he's on the ball, making the calls and everything, processing quicker, and he had four consecutive really good throws, right? Nice slant to Godwin on the right side, and he came back to the other side. Brandon Lewis hit him in the hands, and he dropped it. But then he had a good shot to Dez Fitzpatrick, actually.
Yeah, I thought that was a really nice throw.
The anticipation on the seam. He threw it right before he cut inside. So that was really good. And a nice shot down the field to Burks, but he wasn't able to get that second foot in. So that was good, you know, from the team that period.
Talking to Teron Davenport, Titans NFL Nation reporter for ESPN. He joins us every Monday here on Chase Willie and D-Mace. And I'm loving this receiver battle. I mean, you know, talking about those guys, because I think they could keep nine if they really wanted to. but we know that's not going to happen. We talked to Austin Hooper, and I was really impressed looking down and seeing Austin Hooper, you know, work with Tannehill and everything, mm-hmm. Work with Logan Woodside. I like his demeanor. I think he's going to bring something both on and off the field to this team that, you know, maybe they haven't had, especially at that position, since Delanie Walker. Have you seen that?
He has that Eli Manning-like calming presence.
Yeah.
Where it's just like there's no emotion from the dude.
Yeah.
So that's going to be calming in the huddle, you know, in those critical times. So I could agree with you there. I like the extra effort that he's made to get that relationship with Tannehill. It's something he said from the jump when he first spoke to us. He said that's what he was going to do. And tight end quarterback relationship is mandatory. So, and especially in this offense where I think the tight ends – Austin Hooper, I'm going to draft him in my fantasy league.
Yeah?
I stuttered because I didn't want to let it out.
Yeah,
but, I'm going to keep it real with you.
Okay.
Okay. All right. I like it. Okay, now let's
that might have to be one of our three fantasy questions later today.
It might be. Let's hit Teron with our question of the day that we were talking about. So, coaches in the league now or all time that have had success without that top-tier franchise quarterback. And the reason we've brought this up is I would say Vrabel is in the mix for that. He's probably the most successful right now with – what he's done with Ryan Tannehill is being very good, but obviously not the Rodgers, Brady, tier one type. Who stands out to you when you think about that?
Well, first one that came to mind for me, just because he's a local to us now, Brian Billick, with them winning with Trent Dilfer as the quarterback, and before that, Tony Banks. I think you look at the Bucks teams with Brad Johnson. So I'll give the credit to Tony Dungy. But, you know, John Gruden won the chip with him. Those are two that pop out.
Where would you put John Harbaugh in that? Because it goes pre-Lamar Jackson to Joe Flacco.
Yeah. Well, I think at that time Joe Flacco was considered one of the better passers in the league.
Right.
I think he was a little more than just serviceable.
Sure.
No question. And so that is part of it. It's just, you know, how below the first tier is your quarterback? And a lot of the common thread that we've had when we had this discussion is if you have the great defense. And that's what, to me, is interesting about Vrabel. I don't think he's had that top level defense. This on paper might be his best defense he's had to work with.
Yeah, I think this is on paper the best that he's had to work with. But it just, you look at that 2019 success, it was just putting stuff together and just finding ways to win. It was more than just the defense. They just found ways to win. And you got Derrick Henry every week. We're mentioning, oh, Derrick Henry just did something that Barry Sanders did. Oh, he did something that Jim Brown did. Oh, he did something that Walter Payton did. So that was a big part of it, too. And if you remember, you know, that NFC Championship week, right, they had a pitcher – or the – yeah, they had a pitcher – what was it? Patrick Mahomes. It was the quarterbacks and Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
That's who was in the advertising.
So he is a big part of the equation.
Yeah.
For sure. But that it's an interesting philosophical discussion of how much tougher your job becomes as the head coach when you don't have the absolute top-level quarterback, because there's so few of them, but some of the great coaches, you see the great quarterback alongside. So who can do well with a little bit less?
Yeah, and that's important. I think, you know, like I said, this team, they just find ways to win. And you got to like that. You know, their formula for winning is unique in this day and age, right, because they're not throwing the ball 50 times a game. They're so focused on turnovers, ball control, field positioning, which I think is going to get better with these returners that they have.
He is Teron Davenport. Talking with TD is the podcast. A new one drops every Wednesday. You can check that out at thegamenashville.com. Also does a fantastic job for ESPN. You can see him on TV, read his stuff, hear him on the radio. He is everywhere. TD, thanks for the time as always.
For sure. Appreciate you guys.
Teron Davenport. Coming up next, we'll get back into this. Coaches that have had success without the top-tier franchise quarterback. Plus, coming up this hour, your chance to win tickets to see Michael Bublé, but you will have to answer an NFL trivia question. We will do that coming up. Chase Willie and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. And yes, we are presented by Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, a York-certified comfort expert company. Schedule now at springhillac.com. Taking your calls and texts on our phone line, driven by WilsonKennyHyundai.com at 615-737-1025. Coaches that have had success in the league without the top-tier franchise quarterback. And let me preface this by saying what success is. It doesn't necessarily mean they've won a Super Bowl. It doesn't even have to mean that they've appeared in a Super Bowl. I mean, I think it can be, you know, have they won division titles? Have they made the playoffs? Have they won playoff games? Obviously, the Super Bowls help this argument, but
of course,
you know, some of the common names. You know, a lot of people are saying Ditka and Jim McMahon. You know, that defense obviously carried that team, and Jim McMahon, you know, when healthy, could be pretty good.
Yes, and I think what we find as well is the further back you go, if you go back before the salary cap era and before free agency, it was easier to keep together a great team. So you probably had an easier time as a coach being able to build a great team without the great quarterback, if that's the route you wanted to go. So if you want to go way back to some of those teams, like Mike Ditka's teams, that was pre-salary cap era. But I got this idea in my mind because I was listening to Rich Gannon this morning, and he was talking about Sean Payton. And he was saying when Sean Payton wants to get back into this, if and when, he's going to probably want to choose wisely because he did a great job, but he always had Drew Brees. And so that just makes your job easier as a head coach. He also used Andy Reid as an example. He said Andy Reid at different times of his career seems like he's probably getting burned out. But he said, why would you go anywhere now? You've got the franchise quarterback. Now, he'll be challenged this year because he's now starting to lose some of the pieces, right, in particular Tyreek Hill. But he's still got Patrick Mahomes. And so your job as a head coach, it's easier to win when you have that guy. And so going back to Sean Payton, he got one glimpse of trying to make it work when he didn't have Drew Brees, made his job tougher. So where is he going to go next? And so it just got me thinking. How do you answer that question? There's no right or wrong answer, but we'd love to hear your thoughts as a listener. 737-1025. Call us or text us.
You can tweet, too.
Tweet at us, sure.
We've got some tweets.
Whatever you prefer. But who would you put together? Because I would argue that in the salary cap era, especially just recently, Vrabel has to get some high marks because What did some of these coaches had? They had a powerful defense that carried you. Ditka in the Bears would be a great example that helped. And you could keep that defense together. Bill Parcells and the Giants, you could keep that defense together because there was no free agency to speak of and there was no salary cap. So you just keep whoever you want to keep. But now it's tougher. But Parcells is a good one because Parcells not only did it for the Giants, but then when he went to New England, Drew Bledsoe was a high first-round pick, but I don't think we would ever consider him a tier one. He was a solid tier two at his best. He had him in both New England and then later in Dallas. And in between that, he was with the Jets and probably got the most out of Vinny Testaverde that anybody got. But Vinny Testaverde was never a tier one guy. So Parcells is a very good answer. But I put Vrabel with some really high marks in that regard in this category.
Here's an interesting one that we've gotten a tweet about and then a text as well. Rex Ryan and some of the Jets teams with the Sanchez, with Mark Sanchez, they did go to back-to-back AFC championship games, obviously lost those games. It was a short window, but I think for the sake of this argument, that's considered success. I mean, those were some pretty good Jets teams.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, especially when you look at the history
of the
Jets.
Were they the number one seed in one of those?
I don't know. Let's see. When they had Rex Ryan, first of all, any relative success with the Jets is noteworthy because they've had some lean times, I can tell you. But in those years, and we're talking Rex Ryan was late 2000 aughts, right, when he got there?
Right.
So Rex Ryan got there in 2009, and they went to back-to-back AFC titles the first 2 years. But then he kind of leveled off after that. So it wasn't a sustained run.
No.
So the last 4 years for Rex Ryan, 8-8, 6-10, 8-8, 4-12. So.
And then two mediocre years in Buffalo.
It did kind of fall off there. But I think that's a good example of making it happen with limitations from your quarterback. He had an excellent defense. So how would you compare that to Mike Vrabel? I'd say Vrabel has had more sustained success for a longer period of time.
Oh, no doubt.
So I'd take Vrabel's resume here over Rex Ryan, only because Ryan didn't sustain it quite as long.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I...
But we're illustrating a point. It's hard to win when you don't have a tier one quarterback. It doesn't mean you can't win, but that's where I think a coach really earns his keep. Is who can get the most out of a team when you don't have the elite quarterback?
Matt from Nashville on our text line says recent coaches would be Harbaugh, Flacco wins the Super Bowl, Tomlin. I don't know if I agree with that. Roethlisberger was a bum in recent years. McVay made Super Bowl pre-Stafford. Oh, that's true. And then Shanahan, Kyle Shanahan. I mean, getting there with Jared Goff, that's interesting. And I would even say that Stafford is not tier one anymore. I would say he's tier two.
Well, Mike Sando had him at the top of tier two.
Right.
I don't know that he was ever in tier one, Stafford, even with the Lions.
It's hard to say. I think that's a really interesting discussion because –
incredible.
You take him off the Lions and put him with a good team, a good organization. Could he have been tier one?
Well, we got to do this a lot with in the post Super Bowl with the ring.
Yeah,
with his Hall of Fame resume, I still am not sure that he's a Hall of Famer, but a lot of people argue that he is, so I think that will be a debate when the time comes. Shanahan is an interesting one, Kyle Shanahan, because he's done some good things with the 49ers.
Sure.
Without the elite quarterback. Very creative, and this will be tested with Trey Lance now. Can he get them to another level with the gutsy move that they're about to make? At some point, they're going to let Jimmy G go.
Yeah, look, Kyle Shanahan got the 49ers to a Super Bowl with Jimmy Garoppolo as the starting quarterback. And I think we would agree that Jimmy Garoppolo is at least tier three. I mean, that's what he is.
Well, we'll go by Sando. He's the top of tier three.
Yeah.
Right? Tannehill and Garoppolo are, by definition, the top end of tier three. Borderline, bottom tier two.
But But I think, and that's the thing, I think with Tannehill, you know, Tannehill's first couple of years here with the Titans, he was for sure tier two.
And, well, he played at a tier two level, you could say.
Right.
And clearly. And borderline tier one, if you want to really stretch it.
But I think with the right pieces around him, he can be the top of tier two.
And that's where the coach comes in. And that's where the GM really comes in, you know, too, putting the pieces around him. But I think it's a good exercise to appreciate the value of Mike Vrabel as we sit here today, because he's gotten some pretty good mileage out of this franchise without what I would say a loaded roster at any point. You know, the only superstar has been Derrick Henry.
Sure.
Am I missing anybody? I'm talking about a true superstar. Now, Jeffrey Simmons might end up being one, and he's close. Other than that, I don't know if we can name one.
A.J. Brown could have been.
Oh, he's got a long way to go before I say superstar.
Yeah, no, that's why I said could have.
All-star year, yeah. I mean, difference maker, yeah. But superstar, no.
I would agree with that. Coming up next, your chance to win a pair of tickets to see Michael Bublé, our big giveaway that we're doing, but you must participate in Titans training camp trivia. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. If you want to take that special someone to see Michael Bublé, here is your chance to win. That is all next here on Chase William D. Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game.
And I'm feeling good.
1025, 1063, The Game. Chase William D. Mace. Chase McKay, Willie Donick live at Titans Training Camp. Your chance right now to win a pair of tickets to see Michael Bublé at Bridgestone Arena on Tuesday, August 16th, and qualify to win a Davidoff cigar and cocktail at Blend Bar, plus a gift card. This is a big prize that you could win before sports come back and football season starts, and you're not going to want to take the misses out anymore. So this would be a very, very cool prize, but you must participate in Titans Trivia, 615-737-1025. You must call 615-737-1025 because Willie has gotten his questions, plural, ready to go.
Category today is Titans uniform numbers with Titans training camp trivia. So I'm going to hit you on the spot. You got to get back-to-back guys right. You got to get two. So if you get one, maybe you were lucky. You got to get back-to-back. Two correct answers in a row. The numbers will change. The players will change. So you have to roll with the punches here. In other words, if the guy before you misses, you're not going to get those same numbers. So there'll be fresh players each time. 737-1025 for the Michael Bublé tickets. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. While we wait for people to call, I just saw this text about our previous topic about coaches.
Yeah.
Here's an interesting
one. Winning without the superstar quarterback.
It's a one-year thing, I would say. Lovie Smith should be an all-time great on this list for getting Rex Grossman to a Super Bowl.
That was sort of a one-year wonder, but
sexy
that
Rexy.
Is a good, yeah, that is a good one.
Chad from Chattanooga, that's a good one. Dick Vermeil, this is from Henry. Dick Vermeil got there with Ron Jaworski, and at a time when Kurt Warner was no way considered a tier one quarterback.
Well, he wasn't when he first took over, but boy, he was by the end of the year. He was probably the league's MVP. So that's an interesting one.
I think that's an interesting one.
Yeah, I'd have to look at the other years of Lovie Smith besides the one Super Bowl year, because that overlap some or
Cutler
at his best.
The short window.
Yeah.
Well, did Lovie have Jay Cutler?
Who was the coach when Jay Cutler was that Lovie? The years are running together. I'm focused on today's questions, the trivia right now. So do we have?
We had Jim, but he fell off.
Well, do we have Michael Bublé fans here?
I feel like
they're out there.
See, here's my advice for the fellas right now. Your lady is going to be more inclined to allow you to watch football on Saturday and Sunday when she's going to want to go do something if you take her to Michael Bublé. I'm just saying.
I think
plus you
got
a cigar and a cocktail out of it. Come on. Now.
And if you don't want to go, you find somebody that does. In other words, you could use this as a trade piece, you know, for something else that you do want with some friends of yours. a barter, you know, whatever you got. And also, you get to flex your muscles as a trivia whiz on this show. 615-737-1025.
Yes, come on now.
Uniform numbers.
Let's see. Lovie Smith. When did Cutler get to Chicago?
Cutler was drafted in 06 by the Broncos, and then so he would have been after the run by Lovie Smith and Rex Grossman, right? Grossman,
yeah, but I think they did overlap. They did. Yeah, so
did he replace Grossman basically?
Yeah, but remember they had Kyle Orton. They had a few different.
Oh man.
So Cutler got to Chi-Town in 09. So yeah, he was with Lovie. He was with Lovie to 2012. So 09 to 12. So 7-9, 11-5, 8-8, 10-6.
I would take Vrabel. I would take I would take what Vrabel has done over Lovie Smith.
And
although I do concede that getting Rex Grossman to the Super Bowl was a miracle.
So in 05 they went 11-5, and then the next year 13-3 to the NFC Championship with Rex Grossman. So
okay,
there you go. All right, 615-737-1025. Gator Tim is brave enough to go after the Buble tickets. Gator Tim, welcome in.
All right, Gator Tim, you ready?
Michael Buble, I mean, the old lady should be happy as anything if I win that. So, yeah, let's try it.
Okay, bring it on. You got to get back-to-back ones right. I'm going to give you the player. You give me his uniform number when he was with the Titans. Are you ready?
Oh, I hope so.
Oh, let's hope for you. You are. Okay, let's start with DeMarco Murray. Running back for the Titans, what number did he wear?
DeMarco Murray. Wow.
Yep.
Oh, man, I wish I was a Titans fan. That would help, wouldn't it?
It probably would help, but I'll give you a hint. He wore the same number for his other teams as well.
Let's go 29.
29 is correct. DeMarco Murray wore number 29 for the Cowboys, the Eagles, and the Titans. Days.
Yeah, I had to flash back to his college days in Oklahoma.
Okay, well done. You're halfway there. All right, the second one we're going to ask you is retired number for the Titans / Oilers, Hall of Fame offensive lineman Mike Munchak. What was his number? Hall of Fame offensive lineman Mike Munchak.
I think Matthews was 77. Munchak, 68?
That is incorrect.
68 is incorrect. Nice try. Gator Tim, we appreciate the participation. Hopefully you have sparked interest.
Yes.
Excitement. This is the drill now. You got to get two in a row.
And you're not going to use Munch again?
No. We get two fresh players now.
63
is correct. Mike Munchak, retired number. 615-737-1025.
Let's go to Josh.
Who can get back-to-back Titan numbers?
Josh, welcome in.
Thank you, sir.
All right, Josh. We're going to start off with Nate Washington. Nate Washington. 1,000-yard receiver for the Titans. What number?
84.
84 is incorrect. Sorry. 85 is the answer. He was 85. He and D-Mace wore the same number.
Nate.
Nate Washington, yeah. 737-1025. Bootleg tickets.
Nick, my call screener has gone kaput for a second, so you'll have to tell me if somebody else jumps on.
Do we need to take a timeout?
Oh, here we go.
Andrew's up.
All right. Andrew, welcome in.
All right, Andrew. First number for you will be, can you tell me the number for Corey Davis when he was a Titan?
Corey Davis. He was 85?
85 is the guess, and that is incorrect.
The last two callers have reversed some things. Corey Davis was 84.
Off by one. Off by one.
615-737-1025. Now they're starting to pop through, so we'll give Nick a second to get those on the air because I got to address this from the text line because both Ron and Josh on our text line have sent basically the same text. Josh, Not sure Chase should be giving fellas lady advice. Ron says, did I hear Chase give relationship advice? Chase, laughing emoji. Listen.
Come on. I think it's just common ground. I think we all understand this.
Yeah, I went on a date once.
Come on. I'm giving you slack on this one, Chase. I think you're giving sound advice. Sound advice.
Just remember, let me just give a little behind the curtain inside baseball. Sometimes it's just for show. Sometimes. Just saying. 615-737-1025. Let's go. Who we got on line two, Nick? Nick,
who's up?
All right, let's go to Clint.
All right,
Clint, welcome in.
Your first one is Zach Mettenberger. What number was Zach Mettenberger?
The Met Show.
The Met Show, the Zach Attack.
No, number seven.
Number seven
ding, 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 ding.
Is correct. Halfway there. For the Buble tickets, can you tell me what number was Jack Conklin when he was a Titan?
Ooh.
Jack Conklin, offensive tackle. Outstanding first-round pick. Offensive tackle now with the Browns.
78.
78 is correct.
There you
go. We have a winner.
We do.
Cue the Michael Bublé music. Cue the concert tickets. It is happening. Big date night. Big night. He's going.
Good job, Clint.
Way
well
to go, Clint.
Done. Pair of tickets to see Michael Bublé on August 16th. That's next Tuesday. And qualified to win a Davidoff cigar and cocktail at Blend Bar, plus a gift card. Very, very cool. Very, very good prize for Clint. So we'll get your information. Thanks for everybody for participating. Coming up next, if you missed my conversation earlier with Big Machine Music City Grand Prix winner Scott Dixon, you will hear that. It's Chase, Willie, and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Back here, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase, Willie, and D-Mace live at Titans training camp. D-Mace on vacation, but Chase and Willie here. Willie's going to be on vacation here soon as well. Everybody doing vacation. I'm going to be off this week at times. So.
Hey, you got to have it. But In the meantime, we live in the now. We live in the present. We're going to finish strong on the show today. How about this, Chase, before we – I think we're going to hear from Scott Dixon here in a moment, but – the Ravens spending some pretty decent money for, in my opinion, the best kicker in the game in Justin Tucker. How about that? A 4-year extension with a source, according to ESPN, saying it's worth $24 million. So he is the highest paid kicker, an average of $6 million per season, $1 million more per season than any other kicker. Chris Boswell had signed an extension with the Steelers. He's pretty darn good. But I can totally see the camp from Justin Tucker saying, hey, my guy's better than him. Tucker is better. I don't know that I've ever seen a kicker that's better than Justin Tucker. Agreed?
No, yeah,
we might see the all-time greatest, possibly.
I would agree with that.
I'm trying to think of just the way he's evolved. Nobody kicks it higher, more accurately, more powerfully. He's got everything. And for the Ravens, who are very conscious about analytics and salaries and stuff like that, I think they realize that he's got value. You cannot replace a guy like that.
Before we get to Scott Dixon, in case you missed that earlier, I caught up with him in a great day at the Big Machine Music City Grand Prix. Saturday night, you got to be a part of something really cool as our buddy Plaz, George Plaster, was put in the Tennessee Radio Hall of Fame. You were actually the one that got to induct him, which I think is – a no-brainer, as many years as you two spent together and as much as he's done for your career. But I know that had to be pretty cool.
It was really special for me. I enjoyed it a lot. My wife, Erin, was out there with me. It was a great night. I had been to a ceremony or two before of the Tennessee Radio Hall of Fame. It's a first-class event. It really does make you appreciate just the art of radio across our state. You think about the history of radio in our state when you go back to the Grand Ole Opry and WSM and statewide, all of the different radio stations that have made their mark. I'm much more familiar with Nashville's history than I am, say, Chattanooga or Memphis or Knoxville, but they've all been recognized So to be with that company is fast company for sure. And George was very, very deserving. So I got a chance to say a few words about him because he goes beyond just the talent on the air, right? Just to be able to be a broadcaster that people want to listen to, you have to have great broadcasting skills, and he's got that. But as you know, Jason, he mentioned you during the speech on Saturday night. You've got to be able to mobilize a team. You've got to be up beyond what you do at the microphone. You've got to be able to put together events. You've got to be able to give back to the community. And the other thing that separates him is how he's helped so many others. And you and me would be in this group of help giving breaks to, right? Help putting him in touch. Putting people in touch with other people. Networking. Giving them a break. Starting them in the career. Teaching them how to do it. So I thought it was really well done. And that was one of the things that I thought was pretty cool about how he spoke about it. Because we know how radio has gone over the years. It's a competitive thing now. There's podcasts and there's different outlets to where you can listen to people talking about sports. Not always just the radio. But radio is still a really, really special thing. And especially when you really get down to the nuts and bolts about what it's about. It's about entertainment. Obviously, you got to be able to generate revenue and you got to have an audience, but it's also about just being connected to your community.
Sure.
And that was something he really stressed in his commentary. But it was a great night, and so just a well-deserved honor for him.
Yeah, no doubt. He deserves it, and George has become a friend and obviously has been a mentor for a long time to me, and so very, very happy that he was able to receive that honor and that you got to be a part of that as well. One of the things, obviously, that happened this week in the Big Machine Music City Grand Prix on the streets of Nashville, year number two for that event. I was at the race yesterday. You know, I thought it was a good race, exciting. Obviously did have some big wrecks because of just how tight the course is. They did make some modifications to it this year, including moving the restart zone to the bridge, which I love that. Coming off the hill on the bridge is where they would restart and start the race as well. Scott Dixon would lead the last 15 laps and get the win, the 53rd of his career. And I caught up with the race winner afterwards.
Back here, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Chase McCabe on a golf cart, actually. I've never done this before. With the winner of the Big Machine Music City Grand Prix, Scott Dixon. And, Scott, I would say you made it look easy to get your 53rd career win, but I don't think it was anything but that today.
Yeah, what a wild day. You know, we had a fast car weekend and kind of got caught up in some stuff in qualifying, which, you know, made us start in the mid-pack. We had a good start. I think we picked up three or four, and what ultimately hurt us and put us at the back of the pack was came in for the first stop and the Ajax failed. So we went all the way to the back and then got caught up in a crash. Took the rear underwing off the car and bent the rear suspension. We tried to repair as much as possible, but, you know, ultimately the car was in pretty poor shape. And to add to that, you know, I think on the last stop we didn't take tires, so we did 45, maybe more laps on a set of tires. So those last few laps were wild, just trying to hold on and, you know, against competition that, you know, we're in definitely a bit of a better situation. But huge kudos to the team and what they did and what they created for strategy. But what a wild day, man. It's always wild here in Nashville.
No doubt about it. And how did the track change from, you know, starting with, we had the rain earlier today, and obviously you guys started with a green racetrack. So how did you feel it changed as it went on?
Yeah, ultimately the tracks normally grip up quite good, you know, but for a situation like us where the car was damaged, it was just really trying to hold on, and tire deck gets worse as well. But, you know, as the temperature comes off, it's really hard to keep the temperature on the tires. And with all those, you know, cautions at the end, you know, the first few laps are just wild because you have no grip. So you're trying to make sure that you don't go in too deep and lock the brakes. And there's just so much of the process that you're trying to think each corner as it comes. For me, it was just so happy to see that checkered flag when I turned out of turn 11 and could see it. And I knew McLaughlin was going to be, you know, one more lap, I think we were toast.
AJ Foyt, Scott Dixon, Mario Andretti, second all time. How special is that?
It's just wild, you know, for me to you know, even be mentioned in names like that. You know, they're heroes of mine, people that I love so much watching. Did I ever think I'd get to this point? Absolutely not. You know, so I feel so thankful, but, you know, all all but one of these races was won with Chip Ganassi, you know, so thankful to him and the partnership that we've had. And you know, feels so much for me just trying to give back to the people that made it possible to get to this level. And that's, you know, started with my family to all the investors that I had as a young kid.
Now, I don't know if you've thought about this or not, but Chip Ganassi Racing's won five straight in the city of Nashville, including today and your three at the Nashville Super Speedway. So this has to be a pretty good city for you.
That's a very good stat. And yeah, it's pretty cool. You know, I think the other stat too is that every person that's won at Nashville has gone on to win the Indianapolis 500. So hopefully, I know it's only one, but hopefully we can, you know, we can do that next year. You know, I think that was the biggest bummer for me so far this season. But yeah, great stats. It just shows you what this team is capable of doing and will continue to do.
Scott, congratulations.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Cheers.
Scott Dixon, the winner of the Big Machine Music City Grand Prix, his 53rd career victory, now second to A.J. Foyt on the all-time wins list, A.J. Foyt with 67. So still some work to do for Dixon to catch A.J. Foyt to be the greatest of all time. But passing a guy like Mario Andretti is pretty darn special, and you could hear the gratitude, and he had to work for it. You know, I said to him when we got on the golf cart, which was very interesting to do an interview from a moving golf cart, by the way. I said to him that, you know, you make it look easy, but I know it wasn't easy at all. And he laughed and he said, I'm tired. I mean, I'm tired after this one.
That
so
was
he had to work for it.
Good interview. And I do think the real thing, if you can remember one thing about that victory by Scott Dixon, puts him between A.J. Foyt and Mario Andretti. That is really amazing stuff right there. If you're a certain age, that's probably going to resonate more with you than
sure
some of our younger listeners. But that is amazing. Now, I want to ask you about the golf cart. Now, what was your technique? Were you sweating? Were you?
Oh, I was nervous because I had the way that I was doing the interview was my phone, and then I have a thing that plugs into it for a microphone.
Yeah.
And so I kind of had to hold that.
And you're walking along?
No, I was on the back of the golf.
You're actually on the cart.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Okay. We were moving, so I'm trying to hold on so I don't fall off the back. Because there were a few times,
And what do you have to hold on to?
There's a rail kind of next to you.
But you're holding the mic with the other hand.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, I couldn't really – there wasn't really much I could hold on to. And we hit a few bumps, and I thought I was going to go flying off. Scott's just sitting there like a pro. He's done this, you know, a ton of times. So he was fine, but was pretty funny.
When the interview was over, where were you? Like, were you, like, way out of range? Find yourself having to walk, like,
no,
a mile back?
No, we were at the media center. The media center was in Nissan Stadium. So, you know, for those of us that are familiar with covering the Titans – you go into the media entrance at Nissan Stadium, then downstairs into the interview room where Mike Vrabel does his press conferences. That was the media room. So they were taking Scott in to go do his media availability with everybody else. So we rode from Victory Circle, which was at the other end zone by the fan zone and everything, and then came over to the media center. So fun weekend for sure. But the golf cart was definitely a highlight and a lot of fun to be able to do.
And you're not injured.
I'm not injured. I'm good. I made it. And it was a good interview. Coming up next, we'll talk to Mitch Light from The Athletic, get into some college football with him, including recruiting practices around college football. That is next. Chase Willie and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.